Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Ethan Elkind. One cannot drive, walk, bike, or ride Muni down the streets of San Francisco and miss the ubiquitous logos of Uber and Lyft. The fluffy pink mustaches have given way to sleek, glowing, individualized marquees. At your service, at the touch of a screen, most rideshare pickups occur in 3 minutes or less, far faster than a taxi or public transit. It's not surprising, then, that the efficiency, convenience, and cost of these services, collectively known as transportation network companies, or TNCs, along with their nifty tracking apps, have widespread appeal. The promise of ride-sharing was to decrease individual car ownership and to minimize the use of private vehicles. Ride-sharing services were also tapped to extend the public transit system by completing routes that buses and rail could not cover, and thus increasing ridership for those transit services. Are the TNCs, like Uber and Lyft, complementing transit routes and reducing private vehicle travel, or are they competing with and disrupting transit and traffic? Uber and Lyft have not disclosed their utilization and ridership data, so independent agencies scramble to study these patterns to shed light on the current usage and to provide localities with objective data so policy recommendations or changes can meet local transportation needs. The rapid growth of ride-sharing companies has undeniably changed the patterns of traffic on our roads. But are they to blame for increased traffic congestion? Had they decreased car ownership? What's been the impact on public transit use? Are ride-sharing services accessible to all Bay Area neighborhoods? And perhaps most importantly, can our existing infrastructure support this burgeoning practice? Joining me tonight in studio to discuss these issues and more is Joel Ramos, Regional Planning Director for Transform, a nonprofit organization that promotes efficient and equitable transit options for Californians regardless of income. Welcome, Joel.
Thank you very much for having me.
And joining me by phone is Joe Castiglione, the Deputy Director for Technology, Data, and Analysis at the San Francisco County Transportation Authority. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And we also invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. You can call us on our toll-free line at 1-866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can email us now at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. And we will open the phone lines up in just about 20 minutes. So, Joel, let me start with you. Can you define for our audience what it means when we use the term ride sharing? What is a TNC?
Well, I think that there's a few ways of looking at it, but for those of us that are just trying to get around, it's a way of effectively calling up a car that is employing a driver that is looking around for fares or for rides, not unlike a taxi service in the past. The difference is, of course, is that the TNCs are a whole lot less regulated. And so that means that they're going to be more affordable, so to speak, in the near term at least, for the people who are hailing the car and the ride. So what that has turned into, of course, is a way for people to get around that is a lot more convenient than they may have in the past with taxis, because the ride hailing is actually taking place in your phone as opposed to calling up a number for a dispatcher or some other means of waving someone down. Of course, the taxi industry has evolved, and they've got their own apps. There are a number of different apps that are out there now for hailing taxis. It's not that hard to find them. But these TNCs are transportation network companies, and like I said, they're regulated outside of the city. They're regulated by the California Public Utilities Commission, and they're operating from all over the state, really. We get people that are driving their cars to ideally make some money picking up people, giving them rides, that are coming in from very far away sometimes. And, you know, they're coming from cities where there's not a whole lot of employment opportunities where they're from. And, of course, there's a lot of money to be made in mobility, getting people around. The taxi industry had a lock on it for years and years. But unfortunately, it looked like they were a little slow to evolve and to get ahead of the curve with respect to the new app-based technologies. And as such, these other transportation network companies, or TNCs, have moved in, and they are really saturating the market, so to speak, with rides that they're able to provide to people looking to get around.
And you mentioned that there's a lot of money to be made in mobility and transportation. Are the drivers making a lot of money, or do you get the sense this is a full-time job for a lot of these drivers, or is this a part-time thing on the side to make extra money?
I think it's a little bit of both. When you talk to different drivers, you know, some of them are working for a couple of different TNC providers. You know, you mentioned the two major ones, and sometimes you'll get an operator that or a driver that is driving for both companies. You can sometimes find a driver that's just making a little bit of money on the side from a permanent job that they have, or a full-time job, I should say, that they might have. So it's in that way, it is different from the taxi cab industry, where most of the drivers that I've seen in the taxi cab industry are full-time.
And Joe Castiglione, I wanted to ask you how these transportation network companies fit into the landscape of San Francisco transportation issues more generally. How do they fit into the existing way that people get around?
Well, I think, you know, that was one of the motivations for developing our TNC's Today report, which we released earlier this year in June. It's hard to understand exactly how, you know, a new mobility provider fits within the kind of ecosystem of transportation options within San Francisco or the region or the state without having some information about, you know, where they are, how many trips there are, where those trips are occurring, when those trips are occurring. And so the goal of the TNC's Today report was to really provide what we're calling kind of a profile of this activity. What we found in that report was that there was a lot of TNC trips that were occurring on a typical weekday, something like 170,000 trips. And that represented, and on Fridays and Saturdays, which were the days of peak usage, over 220,000 trips, in fact, every day. Those trips are primarily happening in the most congested parts of the city at the most congested times of day, and are adding something like 570,000 vehicle miles traveled, which is kind of a key metric, on our city streets every day.
Sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
I was going to say, with respect to how they fit, what we found was, and I should say that our report was limited to those trips that are both have an origin and a destination in San Francisco, so just what we would refer to as intra-SF trips. And by our estimates, something like 15% of all of the vehicle movements that are happening within San Francisco are TNCs in a typical weekday.
So these are pretty striking numbers. I mean, you're talking about 170,000 to 220,000 trips, depending on the day of the week. Do you get a sense that these are trips that would have been happening anyways, perhaps by taxi, or are these kind of new trips that are happening that wouldn't have otherwise happened without these TNCs being in business?
So the initial research that we did with this data that had been shared with us allowed us to kind of develop this profile, but it didn't allow us to know whether these were new trips or what we would refer to as induced travel, or whether these were perhaps shifts of mode, perhaps somebody who had been previously a transit user or a bicyclist or a pedestrian who now has this much more convenient or a more convenient option. We are doing additional, we have a research program that's following on with additional data collection to help us understand exactly, you know, what that looks like. However, there have been other folks who have been doing research in this area who have begun to quantify the amount of additional induced travel due to TNCs, and it looks like it's something in the 8 to 10% range. And again, with respect to kind of shifts in mode, those are trips that would have been happening otherwise, but I think it's important to understand that if somebody were driving themselves and now they're taking a TNC, that's kind of like a one-to-one swap. But for every person who might have taken a trip by transit and is now using a TNC, or who might have been bicycling or walking but is now using a TNC, all of those, you know, transit and bike and walk trips are new vehicles.
Right.
And all of those new vehicle trips contribute to delay and congestion.
And anecdotally, it seems like people have noticed a lot more congestion downtown, and I think a lot of people do attribute that to the rise of these Uber and Lyft rides and other TNCs, and I think the amount of VMT you're talking about seems like that would bear out some of that anecdotal perception. Does that sound right to you?
Well, I think it's a really important question. I think it's undeniable that if people are shifting modes or making and using TNCs or making new trips via TNC that they would not have made otherwise, that undeniably contributes in part to increased congestion and delay. However, I think it's really important to keep a perspective on the many things that have been happening in San Francisco at the same time. You know, TNCs started operating in San Francisco, I want to say around 2010. In between 2010 and 2017, we've had something like 130,000 jobs added and something like 80,000 new residents. So by mere fact of, you know, all of this increased activity, I think we would expect that there would be increased, you know, delay and congestion because there's simply a lot more people in the city and a lot more people traveling around.
So definitely a lot of trends. Transit. That makes sense. A lot of trends converging then that potentially coincide with the rise of TNCs. Hoel, I wanted to bring
That's
you
right.
into this discussion about the impacts that we've been seeing, you know, particularly in places like San Francisco, since we have some data on it now, as Joe just shared. Mm-hmm. What's your take on how these TNCs are currently fitting into the transportation network, transportation system, and maybe how they should be?
Well, I think that anybody that's spending time on our streets is seeing them, that's for sure. And it is a little bit confusing to put your finger on what is causing all the delays throughout the city, at least. In addition to the new jobs, and that's no small number, 130,000 new jobs, it's incredible. At the same time, with the 80,000 new residents, you think of all the cars that a lot of the new residents have brought into the city, all of the new homes that have been constructed or condos or whatever, those are bringing in new cars. And then, of course, on top of all this new growth that San Francisco is experiencing, you're also seeing all the construction that comes with all of these projects, and that contributes to delays. So There's a number of things that we can point to that are acting in conjunction with one another to create the gridlock that so many of us are suffering through. And I'm a daily transit rider. I know firsthand the experience of the delays and how hard it is on everybody trying to get around. When I'm riding my bicycle through the city, it feels like it's still too dangerous to really feel totally safe because of just the amount of cars that are out there fighting for parking spaces, and traffic is, you know, it translates to pressures on people that are trying to get around on bicycle. One thing that I would add, though, to Joe's point is that a lot of these, what is happening with the TNCs, what they are doing is they are also keeping people from having to fight for a parking space as well. So when you do have somebody that's not driving and is taking a TNC instead, what they are also doing is they're freeing up a space for people that are looking for parking who don't have the choice of a TNC. And so that is certainly one of the theoretical benefits of a TNC versus driving by yourself.
I was going to ask you, what are some of the benefits? Because we just talked a lot about the potential negative impacts from traffic congestion. So it sounds like maybe reduced competition for parking. Are there other benefits that you could cite that TNCs bring?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of people are seeing them as being, you know, that for a lack of a better term, of that last mile connection where you're trying to get someplace quickly and, you know, unfortunately we haven't sufficiently funded our transit to operate as frequently or to go where we need to go. And sometimes, you know, it's a long walk or it's taking a lot of time to get where one wants to go. And so having the option of a TNC has been, you know, it's a nice option. I was at the, I was trying to get down to, down the peninsula, and I got off a Caltrain, I got off BART at Millbrae, and I had literally just watched the Caltrain pull away, and I was trying to get down to Mountain View, and sure enough, the next train wasn't going to come for an hour, and there really was no bus service to help me. So in that respect, you know, having a TNC there, or very close by at least, was quite a benefit to be able to engage in. And so I think that it does help in those capacities. I would also add, as someone that has lived in places that weren't very taxi accessible, there were some places where taxis just wouldn't go. If you lived like out in the Sunset or out in the Bayview, for example, you were going to have a hard time getting a cab because a lot of times the cabs wouldn't want to deadhead there or deadhead back, or they were so interested in just picking up an airport fare that they weren't as inclined or as interested in taking short trips. And if you got into a cab and you told a driver that you wanted to go a short distance, they would drive at breakneck speeds to try to get rid of you, so to speak, to find a fare that's going to the airport or somewhere else.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the taxi cab industry. Joe Castiglione, I wanted to ask you about this, how TNCs differ from the taxi cab industry, if you could answer that question, but also why we don't seem to see taxis stimulating the kind of debate that we are seeing stimulated around these TNCs.
Sure. If I could, before I answer or respond to that question, I'd like to link back to some of the other points that have been made. First, I want to note that as the congestion management agency for San Francisco, the San Francisco County Transportation Authority monitors travel times and travel time reliability on the roadways and on transit every other year. And we have absolutely observed empirically that congestion has increased, that speeds have declined. Mm-hmm. Over recent years. So that's not just a perception, mm-hmm. That is a reality. And I think when we talk about TNCs, it is important to ground ourselves in that kind of reality of, you know, what are the actual facts? So, for example, when we talk about things like the theoretical, you know, we can talk about the theoretical benefits with respect to parking or first and last mile transit access, or reductions in auto ownership. But if we're going to have a real conversation, and if we're going to expect that our decision makers are going to make fact-based policy choices, we need to have data mm-hmm. that validates that those theoretical benefits are in fact real benefits. And I think we also need to talk not just about theoretical benefits, but we also need to talk about costs. Because there is a cost to increasing congestion. And that's not to say that all additional congestion is attributable to TNCs, but some portion of it very likely is, and there is a cost associated with that. Mm-hmm. I also want to, you know, highlight this idea of what I would call the kind of contextuality. So in the example of getting off of BART or Caltrain, maybe in the evening, when there's not great transit service or taxis aren't really available, then for sure the availability of a TNC as a mobility alternative or option is almost certainly an unmitigated good. However, the reality is that most of the trips are happening in the most congested parts of the city at the most congested times of day, when there's tremendous transit service in downtown San Francisco in a highly walkable urban environment. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important that we, when we talk about these costs and benefits, we realize that they happen in particular contexts, and that context, and most importantly, actual facts about what's happening on the streets are necessary in order to make informed policy choices. And now to answer your, you know, to address your question about what's different about taxis, I would say, first and foremost, the most significant difference is that the fleet size is entirely different. So SFMTA estimates that there are something like 1,800 taxi medallions that are in service in San Francisco, which means, you know, at an absolute max, that is the number of taxis that would be on the street. The city attorney sent notifications, based on information I think that was provided by the TNCs, to 45,000 TNC drivers in San Francisco. Of those, 21,000 registered for business licenses. And what we have found in our research is that at peak times, and I believe that the peak time was something like 6:30 to 7 on a Friday, there are almost 6,000 TNC vehicles on the street at any time. And that isn't so that is one key difference. And that delivers benefits to travelers in the sense that when you have 6,000 vehicles, for example, you tend to wait much less for a vehicle. And while there are 1,800 medallions out there, in fact, the number that are on the street at peak times is something less than that.
So it sounds like quite a difference in scale, which would explain why people, A, like the service, and B, might be frustrated in seeing a lot of these logos driving around at crowded times. So this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW, San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're discussing the impact of ride-sharing in San Francisco and the Bay Area with Joel Ramos, Regional Planning Director of Transform, and Joe Castiglione, the Deputy Director for Technology, Data, and Analysis at the San Francisco County Transportation Authority. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. We're opening the phone lines now. The toll-free number to call to join this conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. We want to hear about your thoughts on how Uber, Lyft, and other TNCs are transforming the city, and if you take them and enjoy them, or have you noticed some negative impacts in your neighborhood from these TNC providers. You can also email us, as I mentioned, at cityvisions@kalw.org, or a comment you can post on our website, kalw.org, or on our Facebook page if you want to reach us that way. So, Joe Castiglione, you mentioned data in your last comments and how important it is, and much has been made in the press about the fact that Uber and Lyft do not share their data. So I wanted to ask you why that matters. What data do they have access to that we here in the public and maybe among the decision makers should care about?
Data is essential. We elect decision makers to make informed decisions, and those informed decisions about how we spend, billions of dollars, how we recognize impacts to all users of the transportation system, because San Francisco is a fantastically multimodal city. In the absence of data, we simply can't make informed choices, which very likely means we'll make bad choices. The TNCs themselves, of course, have tremendous information that they could, in theory, share with us. And in fact, they're required to report quite detailed data to the California Public Utilities Commission, including information on every trip, where it started at a zip code level, I believe, and where it ended, with a detailed timestamp and all sorts of other extremely useful information for public agencies. However, the CPUC has determined that sharing that information with public agencies isn't in the public interest. So it's not as though there is no data being provided. It's being provided to the CPUC, but there has been no ability for any agency other than the CPUC itself to access that data.
And Joel Ramos, let me ask you, if you could access any one particular ride-sharing, piece of data, so to speak, or datum, I should say, what would you want to monitor regularly and why?
Well, I think that from my perspective, that there's a number of things that Transform is especially concerned about. And our biggest concern with this, with TNCs and all of these emerging mobility services, is about equity. And we just want to make sure that everybody is getting equitable access to transportation services that are being provided and are effectively, to Joe's point, are demonstrably having an impact on the rest of us that are depending on public transit to get around. So from my perspective, I would really be most interested in how accessible are these services or not to people of lower incomes or people of color or communities that are less accessible. I think from Transform's perspective, and we wrote this fantastic report that I would encourage everybody listening to check out if you're interested in really shaping how these emerging mobilities come about or how they're implemented. At transformca.org, you can look up. We wrote a fantastic report called A Framework for Equity in New Mobility. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to make sure that as these new services emerge, whether they're rideshare services or car share services or bike share, whatever they might be, that they're done and they're rolled out in a way that really takes it up a notch from the current transportation system as we know it. There's no shortage of sad stories or unfortunate histories of transportation not really meeting the needs of the people who need them most. Mm-hmm. So I would be most interested in the equity component, making sure that these services are indeed accessible. What's happening a lot, in some cases, fortunately or unfortunately, is a lot of transit agencies in some of the more suburban places are starting to depend on these rideshare providers or these TNCs to provide service where they don't have where transit agencies aren't seeing a significant amount of ridership to justify sending a bus out every so often, and so instead they're effectively contracting out the TNCs to provide those services.
So it could be helpful to have that data in comparison with the transit data.
Precisely.
Like. So we have a bunch of callers on the line here, and I want to start with Henry. Henry, welcome to City Visions.
Yes, hello. Yeah, I've just noticed in my experience that it seems like a lot of the or some of the added congestion is from drivers positioning themselves, especially in the city where there's one-ways and things, to get to the right position for picking up a passenger. And I think algorithmic changes could be made such that if a person is able and willing to walk up to half a block, there could be optimizations to basically more efficient pickup locations.
So, Henry, thank you for that question. Let me hand that one over to Joe Castiglione in the San Francisco County Transportation Authority.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case, that there are solutions, technology solutions, policy solutions that can help address that issue. You know, specifically, you know, the apps themselves in certain locations will tell you, go to this location. You're requesting a ride here. We're not going to pick you up here. We're going to pick you up over there. And I think there's no question that those sorts of solutions can help mitigate some of the kind of impacts on traffic operations. I do think that there's a much broader question of the, you know, how many, all of the trips that are occurring and the sheer volume. But undeniably, there are ways that we can manage and reduce the amount of additional delay and congestion that's associated with things like pickups and drop-offs. And our colleagues at the SFMTA are really working hard to try and identify those types of solutions and the locations in which those are appropriate.
And it sounds like some of those changes might need to happen at the TNC themselves to be able to put in new algorithms if that's a possibility. So, Henry, thank you for that call. Let's go to Arturo next. Arturo, welcome. City Visions.
Hi, I'm Arturo, the bicycle rider, so I have to take that point of view. I'd just like to point, I heard these figures of 80,000 new, was it 80,000 this and 130,000 new jobs. I'd just like to point out that a lot of the people who are occupying the spaces, formerly occupied of those spaces, are now out on the street in tents, and that one of the reasons there's so little enforcement of traffic laws is that the cops are out there persecuting people in tents. That said, just in regard to Uber drivers and Lyft drivers, one fact you're not taking into account is that they're extremely distracted when they're devoted to their screens and not paying attention to what's going on around them. I've got narrowly escaped being hit several times by them. They don't obey traffic laws. They're constantly making U-turns. And that, you know, perhaps an accommodation should be made and there ought to be less micromanagement of traffic on the streets and have a new order of traffic control, if and perhaps a little less. Mm-hmm.
So Arturo, thank you for that comment / question. I've definitely heard similar complaints from people who are particularly actually other bikers that these TNC drivers are taking up the bike lanes. So Joel, I know you wanted to respond to this, but Joe, I also wanted to let you weigh in particular around enforcement practices and how the TNCs are kind of disrupting other movements, particularly for bicyclists and maybe in transit lanes as well.
Sure. Well, this is Joe. I think this question of there was this recent study by SFMTA with information from, I believe, SFPD about traffic violations within the financial district in South of Market and Mission, and something like north of 60% of those violations were associated with TNCs. So unquestionably, there is really an enforcement issue that requires attention. I would also point out that, you know, with respect to kind of distraction and being kind of wedded to an app to tell you where to go and lack of familiarity with the local streets and street network and lack of familiarity with local laws, that's not entirely surprising given that what our research found was that something like 70% or more of drivers, and I think Joel referred to this earlier in his comments, are coming into San Francisco from outside of the city and the county. So it's not surprising when you have the vast majority of drivers coming in to make money in San Francisco, which is, of course, totally logical. There's a density of people and a density of activity and an ability to very quickly do lots of trips, which helps make money. All makes sense. But those folks aren't going to be as familiar with the city, and that an outcome of that may be, you know, challenges with respect to enforcement.
Mm-hmm. And Joel, did you want to respond to Arturo's comment around these distracted drivers?
Just very quickly, I think that it's important to acknowledge that because a lot of these folks are from out of town, which you got to give a shout out to the taxi drivers. A lot of them are very familiar and don't need to depend on apps to get around. It's always refreshing when you get into a cab and the guy just knows exactly where you need to go and isn't looking at an app. It's really rather terrifying for me as a bicyclist, and I would imagine many people like Arturo who are on bicycles, when you're having to pass a TNC like an Uber or Lyft, you got to pass by them on the left because they're double parked, and then they start to accelerate out and they're looking at an app, and they're not looking for bicyclists, they're looking for other cars, and next thing you know this car that you're trying to pass is starting to take off and they're just not seeing you. They clearly need training. The answer in that is helping these TNC companies come to terms with the fact that San Francisco is not like any other city. Well, very few cities with the terrain, with the amount of people, the amount of buses. There's so much happening in such a small amount of space. It takes a different kind of level of training to be a professional driver here.
Yeah, it seems like training and enforcement would be helpful.
Indeed.
So this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're discussing the impact of ride-sharing services in San Francisco and the Bay Area at large with Joel Ramos, Regional Planning Director of Transform, and Joe Castiglione, the Deputy Director for Technology, Data, and Analysis at the San Francisco County Transportation Authority. We invite you to call in with questions or comments. The toll-free number to call to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. So let's go back to the phone lines. We have Ed. Ed, welcome to City Vision. What's your question for the panelists tonight?
And if it's the right ad, it's I've driven for both taxis and Uber, and I've got some comments.
Yeah, we'd love to hear it.
Okay, something I say to the guy from Uber, well, he Transform Uber, same thing. the guy was trashing cab drivers for not picking people up, and so on and so forth. Well, you can do that to anybody. You know, there's a few rotten apples.
Yeah, no, it happens.
The main weakness with the cabs is that they had a chance to put an app in 2010, and the city put out the money to put it in every taxi in the city, and there are a few of them turned it down. So that's what put them way behind. You find generally that the cab drivers are much better drivers. They're trained, and they have to pass tests and things like that. You've got a lot of Uber drivers coming into the city that aren't trained and don't know where they are. I think somebody mentioned that. They're looking at the... I found this myself when I've driven in. If I go down to San Mateo or something, I end up looking at the app all the time because I don't know the area. So the fact that so many other... They're not regulated, and they're not regulated on living here, and the numbers aren't regulated, makes it somewhat hazardous. Maybe a lot hazardous. I'm not sure. There's a weird insurance. This is something that's kind of the TNC's managed to convince people that they're insured, but in fact, they're not necessarily. People in the car are probably insured, although not as well as they are in a taxi cab. But the people on the street aren't necessarily. A lot of these Uber drivers don't have. There's a commercial insurance that's supposed to cover this, but when I went to Uber, they actually discouraged me from buying it because they wanted to put my car on the street. I looked around for about 10 days before I found a good insurance to cover it. But I doubt that most of these drivers have this kind of insurance. Mm-hmm. So if a bicyclist or a pedestrian is hit by one of these people, they've got to go. They signed a waiver of liability. There's a waiver of liability, and the driver is held responsible, not the company. Mm-hmm. So that's a big. Yeah, that's a big.
That big difference, yeah. Ed, I appreciate you calling with these comments and explaining the, you know, some of the real practical differences between taxi, you know, the regulation of taxi drivers and the taxi industry versus these TNCs. And since you mentioned Joel and his comment around getting where he could get access to a ride, Joel, did you want to respond?
Yeah, you know, I mean, to the gentleman's point, you know, there has been a study in that report, which again, I'm gonna pitch because I think it's important for everybody to read it. It's a framework for equity and new mobility at transformca.org. We were able to cite a study that was sourced from the Natural Bureau of Economic Research in 2016 that demonstrated that discrimination exists in the TNC drivers as well. We were able to see that that both Uber and Lyft drivers were canceling requests that were coming in from people who had names that sounded a certain way, and it's unfortunate, but it exists, and that's where I do think that this emerging new mobility has the opportunity to change things, to do things very differently from the way that we did in the past. Giving one more shout out to cab drivers that I think that the TNCs yet to have to pick up on and respond to is the fact that a lot of these cab companies, this is a benefit that I think that we take for granted and that hasn't been discussed yet, they also operate ramp taxis, which are vehicles that would allow for people with disabilities to be able to call a cab on demand very quickly and get to where they need to go very quickly. They were, as part of the regulated services in San Francisco, they were required to provide so many rides via ramp taxis. And this is a tremendous benefit for people with disabilities because, unfortunately, the paratransit services that the county offers just aren't where they need to be in terms of level of service. Like, they just can't provide rides as quickly as people would like. And the operators there are doing amazing things. You know, they're wonderful people doing great stuff, but the demand is just really, really outpaces what we have, and the cab companies help with that.
Mm-hmm. And Joe Castiglione, I wanted to let you have a chance to discuss the safety issue that's been brought up here. What's your response to the safety challenges and the differences between taxis and TNCs on this?
Well, I think that the caller really identifies a really critical concern, which is that when we talk about safety and TNCs, we're not only talking about the safety of the passengers and of the drivers themselves, but as I alluded to earlier, San Francisco is a multimodal city. So we need to also be concerned about safety for the people on the streets, safety for the bicyclists riding in the bicycle lane, safety for the transit users who's stepping off that vehicle or who's trying to maneuver around or walk around a transit vehicle that perhaps wasn't able to pull into its stop. So I think we need to think about safety more broadly. And with respect to some of the dangerous driving behaviors, this is one of the things that I don't think has gotten a lot of attention up to this point. In some of the data analysis that we have done, our initial results indicate that almost 10% of drivers are driving shifts that exceed or are up to 24 hours or more. So that is a really long time to be driving. And in fact, this is one of those items as well where the CPUC does get data on the hours and miles logged by drivers, which would be helpful for helping to kind of inform whether this is indeed, you know, a real issue and risk, but haven't been forthcoming with that data.
So another good example of where we could use some more data on things. So, Ed, thank you for that phone call. And I wanted to read an email comment that we got saying that we need a more balanced approach, I think, for this discussion. And the comment is, so many drivers in San Francisco who do not make a living driving also drive in ways demonstrating the need for training. Uber and Lyft serve a need for those who need transportation and for those drivers who need to make a living. So definitely appreciate that comment. And this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're discussing the impact of ride sharing in San Francisco and the Bay Area. We're joined by Joel Ramos, Regional Planning Director of Transform, and Joe Castiglione, the Deputy Director for Technology, Data, and Analysis at the San Francisco County Transportation Authority. Please do call in with your questions or comments. We invite them, the toll-free number to call to join this conversation. Conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. And you can also email us at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on our website, kalw.org, or on our Facebook page. So many ways to reach us. And I want to go back to the phone lines to Rue. Rue, thank you for calling in.
Hi, this is Rue, and I take taxis. I don't take Lyfts and Ubers, and I just feel much more confident in a taxi. First of all, I have a disability. It's not a mobility issue, but I'm vision impaired. And I know that taxi drivers, just like muni drivers, are trained in dealing with people with disabilities. I don't know anything about Uber and Lyft drivers, but I do know that the taxi drivers and the muni drivers have to take this training. So that's one issue. I wish that the Uber and Lyft drivers were more regulated, because I don't have any confidence that, you know, supposedly they have insurance. I don't know. Well, I was in a taxi, I was in a fender bender in a taxi about a year ago, and, you know, it was a piece of cake. They stopped. I had complete confidence that if anything was wrong with me, if I needed treatment, if I needed any compensation, I was not going to have any problem getting it. They called immediately. Another taxi picked me up, took me home, didn't charge me for the ride. So I just feel more, I feel like the taxi industry is a lot more together. And the Lyft and Uber thing is just a little more flaky and weird. And that goes along with what other people have been saying, that the drivers don't always know where they are. They don't know how to drive. They're looking at their phones. I have seen many times, I've been waiting for a muni bus and seen an Uber or a Lyft parked in the bus stop because they don't really regard traffic regulations. They don't have any, they have no connection with the local community because they do come from a distance, many of them.
Yeah. And so, Rue, I'm sorry.
No,
I'm sorry.
Local regulation.
Yeah, no, I think you're raising important points and distinctions, but we're starting to see here in this hour that we've been discussing this topic, the difference between taxis and TNCs, you know, whether it's perception or data, people certainly are seeing some different strengths and weaknesses on both. Joe Castiglione, did you want to respond to that comment from Rue?
I think my only response to that would be, I think it's great that Rue has that confidence in taxis. I think that this is probably an expression of the different regulatory regimes under which taxis and TNCs operate, and the fact that they do operate under different regulatory kind of rules has a whole bunch of different outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's that sounds absolutely right. Thank you, Rue, for that call. And let's go to David. David, welcome to City Visions.
Thank you very much for taking my call, and I appreciate this conversation. I'm going to be your one and perhaps only caller calling in from the other side of the digital divide. My comment relates to safety, accessibility, and discrimination. The most important salient difference between TNCs, as you call them, and taxi cab companies is that it is impossible to access the services of a TNC unless you have an expensive smartphone. You cannot pick up and call for a TNC. This is discriminatory against people who don't have smartphones, who may be low-income people. Furthermore, when you're walking down the street and you observe dangerous or illegal vehicular behavior on the part of TNC drivers, such as the most common one pulling over to the curb without using the emergency flasher lights while they're parked, for example, blocking a bike lane on my street, or when you see an Uber and Lyft driver illegally using their emergency flashers driving down the middle of the road, which is not only illegal but dangerous because it renders their turn signals useless for communication, there is no way that you can report that behavior to the company, and there's no accountability thereof. So in my opinion, none of these companies should be permitted for operation unless they make their services available to people with a plain old regular phone.
Thank you
very much.
Yeah, no, David, I appreciate the comment. Joel, did you want to respond?
Yeah, I think that there's that's one of our primary concerns is accessibility, as I had noted earlier. And I don't mean just accessible as in people who are impaired with respect to their mobility. I mean accessible in terms of what people can afford, where they live, how they're accessing the technology. One of the things that Transform was pushing for very early on with the bike share that was coming out was the $5 annual membership fee for people of lower incomes to be able to access these services. And we were thinking about making sure that they had access to being able to sign up for the bike share without a phone. And we identified locations in the community where people could go to sign up for these things. And that's the kind of opportunity that we do have with these new services that I would like to hope we come away with a transportation network that is more equitable than it currently is or has been. But it's going to take some vision on the part of these new service providers. And, you know, kudos to those services that have been made accessible as much as possible. You got to love Muni for as accessible as it is for anybody who has whatever disability. Muni has been the solution for so many people in a way that TNCs haven't been.
All right. So let's go back to the phone line. So Liz is on the line. Liz, welcome to City Visions. Liz, are you on the line?
Hi. Most of my questions have been answered. They've already been dealt with by previous bicyclists with safety concerns. But I have two additional points. And one is in response to that email about other drivers who also need training and have problems. That's true. However, after 30 years of riding a bike in this city, incident-free, I've had two accidents in the last 6 months with Ubers who either let passengers off in the middle of traffic with absolutely no warning or swerved in front of me into the bike lane with absolutely no warning. And I just want to know, what will it take to require Uber to train their drivers and to require our police to actually enforce the law? It's insane out there.
All right, Liz, thank you for that question. Joe Castiglione, did you want to respond?
Well, I mean, I think this question of enforcement is again, very real and very legitimate. And I understand that our agent partners at other city agencies like SFMTA are truly aware and concerned about it. So I can't promise or say that there's a solution in hand, but I think that there are many people who are, again, keenly aware that this is a very real issue with very real impacts.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to also pick up on the equity thread that was raised a moment ago, and Joel mentioned this question of smartphones being required. I would also add credit cards are also required. So these are all, barriers to different populations in the city, and that is absolutely a concern.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, though, that there are solutions that we can come up with that have been tried in other cities that can help address and mitigate that issue. But to be somewhat contrarian, I would also say that we did include a kind of a first pass of an equity analysis in our TNCs today, report, which I should say is the kind of the first product of a series of research reports that will look at things like TNCs and congestion and the impact of TNCs on transit ridership and on transit operations. When we looked at equity, what we found was kind of a mixed story, which was, in fact, TNCs were serving the western and southern areas of the city, which have historically not been and presently not are as not as well served by our taxi fleet. So in that sense, they are addressing some communities that have been underserved. At the same time, when we looked at, you know, the kind of the intensity of transit usage, TNC usage, excuse me, relative to the amount of population and jobs in different areas, we found that, you know, they were still focused primarily on that core downtown, South of Market, you know, Mission area. Mm-hmm. So it's a mixed story, and I think that there are, I want to be optimistic that there are opportunities for TNCs to really address equity issues, even if maybe they're not fully realizing that yet.
All right. Well, I think that's an important point to emphasize. On the phones, we have Julia. So, Julia, welcome to City Visions.
Hey, thanks. Sorry, I've got a baby in the background here. Basically, my question is kind of a comment and a question. It seems that TNCs are responsive to market needs, where people live, where they're moving to. They're able to serve those much, much faster than public transit. What is public transit doing to be able to respond more quickly to changing places where people live in the city? For example, Bayview, Hunters Point, Mission Bay, and those areas.
Oh, so, Joel, you work with a transit-type nonprofit, so
sure.
You want to weigh in?
Yeah, so I think that the issue that we started the show off with, which was the fact that San Francisco is a growing place with respect to the amount of people, it's not growing geographically anymore, and it's impossible to grow the streets anymore. And so something's got to give. You've got more people coming in, making more demands of the limited space that's available. And when we don't make it easier to get around in transit, it's inevitably going to suffer because of the new amount of people on the streets. So Transform has always been a big proponent of maximizing the efficiency of transit itself. And you see this in ways of getting these red transit-only lanes throughout San Francisco, or creating these services that are skipping stops that are going a little faster, the rapid services, or the, you know, what some people might have called limited in the past. Everything that you see in the Muni Forward plans, where you've got some bus stops that have been designed to have bulb outs so that the bus can spend less time pulling into and then away from the curb. The challenge, of course, is that there are plenty of people that are adverse to these ideas, and so they get in the way of them. And then a lot of the improvements that we were pushing for, like getting the 7 to operate faster, you know, people, particularly you know, folks that are accustomed to the way that things are, were reluctant to see any changes in the way the street is laid out. And the people that suffer, obviously, they're transit riders, because there's no real improvement to their transit ride. It's just getting slower and slower and slower. Mm-hmm.
So thank you for that question, Julie. I hope the baby is getting ready for bedtime. Let's go back to the phones to Claire. Claire, welcome to City Visions. Are you there?
Yes, I am. And my comment is, I am a bicyclist, but I'm also a pedestrian. And I was relating to your operator that, you know, just this Friday evening or Saturday evening, coming out of a concert at the Symphony Hall and walking up Van Ness, I was literally hit, nearly hit, almost four times by right turn on red. And they were all Uber drivers. And as a lot of people are reporting, is that they're so fixated on whatever panel is in their cars. And, you know, I mean, it just, it made it very evident to me that this is a problem, and it's not something that's going to be, you know, easily solved, other than by maybe even just some sort of enforcement of the laws that exist. Like when you're taking, there's a pedestrian in a crosswalk and you've got the red light, even if you can take a right on a red, you shouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, thank you, Claire, for that. You're definitely echoing a theme we're hearing about, you know, the safety issues presented by having more congestion and potentially more of these untrained-type drivers on the road. We did get an email from Bobby who has a specific question for Joe and then a more general one. So, Joe, I'll let you kind of take both of these. The first is, how did you, Joe, get these numbers you're talking about if TNCs aren't sharing their data? So a question around where you got your data from in your report. But the second question for you is more general, which is, what policies do you and Hoel recommend to get this situation under control? So what would be your sort of wish list policy? And Joe, I'll start with you and then let Hoel weigh in.
Sure. With respect to how to get the numbers, it wasn't our, we didn't intend to set out to get the numbers in this way. It was a consequence of the fact that the TNCs were not willing to share the information that's actually useful for us, and that the CPUC has the data, but as I mentioned earlier, wouldn't share it because they deemed that to be not in the public interest. So we set up a research collaboration with some computer scientists in at Northeastern University, and essentially they pinged the Uber and Lyft APIs every 5 seconds for about 5 or 6 weeks in a way that in no way impacted either drivers or passengers or travelers. And when you do that, it sends you some information on where the nearest, in the same way that when you pull up the app on your phone, you can see those little cars moving around. That's real data. And you can actually, it will give you, when you ping their programming interface, it'll mm-hmm. basically tell you where the 8 nearest vehicles are and where they have been for the last minute or so, well, with respect to GPS data. And so we could take all that data and basically distill it down into a profile of where trips are starting and ending and all sorts of other information.
And Joe, we're just coming down to the close of the show, so very briefly, what would be your answer to the second part of that question about your sort of number one policy wish list?
Well, so my role is not to make recommendations with respect to policy. It's to provide information to decision makers.
Or maybe so I should say that for the report, from the report, is there a key takeaway?
No, we don't. In this specific report, we don't mention policies. What we are aspiring to do is to provide actual facts to our decision makers and our board so that they can determine what policies
okay.
might be.
All right, fair enough. Well, I'll let Hoel, the advocate, weigh in then with a policy.
There's a number of things that we can do. I think probably the most important thing is to limit the amount of externalizing of the operational cost of these TNCs or anybody that's driving into the city. And the city talked about a congestion fee a few years back, and we were just beaten over the heads by people that were reluctant to implement it. A congestion fee meaning that if you're going to drive in from outside of the city, like you're driving across the bridge, you would pay a toll or you would pay a fee that would then go towards raising money towards improving transit, improving bicycle infrastructure, improving enforcement of these TNCs. One of the ways that we can do that is particularly on the freeways and effectively using any kind of tolls that would be implemented to raise money to improve transit services and effectively make it so that there isn't a need for these TNCs or anything other than just the mass transit that we all really love, even though it sometimes can be annoying.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that that sort of policy next step that maybe sure. we could take to address it. There's obviously a lot more to talk about here, but we're going to have to leave it there. Yeah. That's City Visions for this evening. Our guests tonight were Hoel Ramos, Regional Planning Director for Transform. So thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure.
And Joe Castiglione, Deputy Director for Technology, Data, and Analysis at the San Francisco County Transportation Authority. Thank you, Joe, for being on.
Thank you, and thanks to all the callers.
Yes, thanks to all of you for joining in this evening. For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page on KALW.org. Our engineer this evening was David LaTulipe. Tonight's show was produced by Judith Sansone. Next Monday, please tune in at 7 o'clock for another City Visions episode with Joseph Pace. This is Ethan Elkind. Good night, and have a great rest of your week.